Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, with 2025 drawing to a close, Governor Kathy Hochul still has a stack of bills on her desk. What will she sign and what will she veto and what could come next? Andrew Waite and Jimmy Vielkind of the New York Public News Network break it down. Celebrate the second night of Hanukkah with us as we explore the smells and tastes of traditional treats at a Monticello bakery. If you haven't noticed, winter is here and your pets need extra protection. Milford Animal Hospital shares top tips to keep your furry friends safe, warm, and healthy during these cold months. Plus, local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. That's all coming up after this hour's news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Israel is warning its citizens around the world to avoid unsecured Hanukkah parties. This follows yesterday's deadly shooting in Australia. 15 people were killed and dozens wounded at a Hanukkah gathering in Sydney. NPR's Daniel Estrin reports from Tel Aviv.
Israel's National Security Council is warning of copycat attacks and is calling on Israelis globally not to attend Jewish gatherings without security guards present. Israel's Mossad intelligence agency is helping investigate the Australia attack. That's according to a person briefed on the matter who spoke to NPR on condition of anonymity. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday blamed Australia's Prime Minister.
Your government did nothing to stop the spread of anti-Semitism in Australia, and the result is the horrific attacks on Jews we saw today.
The Australian Prime Minister cut diplomatic ties with Iran this summer, accusing it of organizing two anti-Semitic attacks in Australia last year. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Police in Providence, Rhode Island are looking for the suspect from Saturday's deadly shooting at Brown University. Two people were killed and nine others wounded in the attack. Brown University's senior Joseph Uduru was leading a study session on economics when he says a gunman wearing a mask came into their lecture hall.
Right after he mumbled whatever he said, that he just started shooting right away. There was no hesitation. We were just praying, calling our parents. There was nothing else to be done other than to pray.
At least two students who witnessed the Brown shooting but were not physically injured say they've been close to or survived other school shootings. Brown student Zoe Weissman was in her middle school when a gunman killed 17 people next door in the high school shooting in Parkland, Florida. And Brown student Mia Tretta survived a school attack after being shot in the abdomen when she was studying in California. Stocks opened lower this morning as investors wait for some overdue economic data. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average was flat in early trading.
Timely reports on inflation and the job market were disrupted this fall by the six-week government shutdown. But some of that information will come dribbling out this week. The Labor Department reports tomorrow on job gains for October and November. We'll also get a look at November's inflation rate on Thursday. Some of the missing data will not be made up, though. Furloughed federal workers were unable to conduct price checks or tally the unemployment rate for October. So for the first time, there will be gaps in those long-running series. The maker of Roomba, the self-driving vacuum cleaner, is filing for bankruptcy. The company called iRobot will be sucked up by its main contract manufacturer. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down about 27 points. The Nasdaq is down more than 60 points. You're listening to NPR. There's an outpouring of sorrow for director Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner. News reports cite a Reiner family statement that says the couple are dead. Los Angeles police are investigating this case as a potential homicide. The daughter of Hong Kong publisher and activist Jimmy Lai says she was not surprised when a national security court found him guilty today. She's still hoping her father will be released soon. NPR's Emily Fang reports.
Claire Lai says her father is an ailing 78-year-old, and he's seen a precipitous decline in health over the last years of his five-year imprisonment so far.
He has heart issues, he has skin problems, he has infections, back issues, waist problems.
The lead judge in his case said Lai harbored, quote, resentment and hatred towards China, which his daughter denies.
When you're guided by the Holy Spirit, there, despite what the judgment says, there is no room for hate and there is no no hate in my father's heart.
Coming from a family of devout Catholics, the younger Lai says she has faith her father's case can be dealt with by political negotiation. Sentencing is expected for mid-January, and Lai faces up to life in prison. Emily Fang, NPR News.
Officials with airline JetBlue have told the U.S. government of a near collision last Friday. A JetBlue pilot says he was taking off from the Caribbean island of Curaçao when he dove his passenger plane to avoid colliding with a U.S. Air Force refueling tanker jet. The JetBlue pilot says the U.S. Air Force pilot flew into the path of the passenger jet. This comes as the U.S. military beefs up its presence near Venezuela. It's NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping those in need is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at lodestarfoundation.org. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. As the year winds down, Governor Kathy Hochul is working her way through dozens of bills that still need her signature. Andrew Waite and Jimmy Vilkind of the New York Public News Network discuss what's in, what's out, and what might be next before the December 31st deadline.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Andrew.
All right, let's start with legislation, and that's going to be a big theme here in state government over the next few weeks. Governor Kathy Hochul requested almost 100 more bills earlier this week and is starting to work through them. What has she vetoed thus far?
Well, one bill that got nixed is called the Grieving Families Act. And this is actually the fourth time that Hochul has vetoed the bill. It would let people, when they file wrongful death lawsuits, sue for pain and suffering. Right now in New York, you can only sue for damages that include kind of the lost wages of the person who's deceased. The state is an outlier in that regard. But Hochul said that she's concerned doing this will drive up insurance costs, potentially higher lawsuit awards, potentially higher insurance costs. And she doesn't want to do that at a time where she's so focused on affordability. So she's told lawmakers, hey, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing multiple times, expect a different outcome, come up with something narrower.
Okay, got it. And now what has she approved?
Well, one that she signed this week would create a center to focus on dyslexia. This is a push that has been undertaken by Assemblymember Bobby Carroll and State Senator Patricia Fahey, who want to say that the state needs to do more to develop curriculum, to train teachers, to better screen and tailor the educational process to the needs of students who just have these reading disabilities. So this bill would create that center within the Department of Education. Carroll told me that he's going to continue to push for funding. He himself had dyslexia as a student, and he has really made a big push about this. Another bill that Hochul signed would require greater language access at hospitals. And there are also some measures that got her signature, which would preclude artificial intelligence use of people's likeness and their voice after they're deceased. So that's kind of a first step toward regulating AI.
Okay. And speaking of AI, there's a high-profile bill about regulating AI that's still pending called the RAISE Act. What would it do, and where does that one stand?
Yeah, that's one of the big ones that's drawn a bunch of lobbying, both for and against. The RAISE Act would require developers of big AI models to come up with a safety plan to prevent their computers from doing things like developing biological weapons or chemical weapons. And it also would make developers liable if that model somehow committed a crime. They would be subject to lawsuits brought by the state attorney general's office. So there's an AI-backed PAC, which is launching ads against one of the sponsors. That's Alex Boris, an assembly member from the Upper East Side of Manhattan, who's also running for Congress. And I'm hearing that Hochul is trying to negotiate a chapter amendment, which are changes that she hopes to see to legislation that could win over her signature. So it's coming down to the wire, and especially given that President Trump signed an executive order theoretically preempting states from regulating AI, I'm really curious to see how it turns out.
Yeah, and we had talked previously about how she was also reportedly negotiating some amendments on the Medical Aid in Dying Act, and that's, of course, would legalize physician-assisted death. Have there been any other amendments like that in the works?
Yeah, quite a few. So as you said, there's the Medical Aid in Dying Act. That's still outstanding. I haven't heard about a resolution with my reporting this week. But one of the other bills that Hochul is trying to get changes to relates to oversight of the prison system. She wants to amend language in that bill, which would require the placement of more cameras inside the state's 42 prisons. That was kind of in the news this week because it was the anniversary of the death of Robert Brooks.
Right.
He was murdered by guards at the Marcy Correctional Facility in 2024. There was a rally at the Capitol, and here's Assemblymember Gabriela Romero talking about the bill at that rally.
The so-called murkiness and darkness of the prison systems will have light literally shed on them. The chunk of the omnibus bill would require that all corners of prisons will be recorded and have cameras in every corner.
Other parts of that bill would change the state's Commission on Correction in terms of its composition. And, you know, it's again, it's something that's kind of has a big back and forth going on.
Got it. And how about medical aid and dying? What's the latest there?
Yeah, as I said, they're still going back and forth on that one as well. But it's actually one of the few bills that's not on Hochul's desk. So that means that it's going to come down to the wire at the end of the year. And maybe even, I hesitate to get into these weeds, Andrew, it could possibly stretch into January where it turns into a pocket veto type situation.
Yeah, we will check back in on that. Okay, looking beyond the state capitol, news in state politics this week to do with the governor's race. Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman officially kicked off his campaign on the Republican side. He's going to launch a bid in the primary against Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. Who is he and how is he framing his campaign?
Well, Blakeman just won a second term as Nassau County Executive by a pretty healthy margin. You know, I was actually there on Long Island on election night, and it was a rare bright spot for Republicans, not just in New York, but across the country. So Blakeman is sort of a longtime GOP party guy and official from Nassau and from Long Island. But in his first term in office, he's won headlines for restrictions on transgender people who want to play women's sports. He's also signed an agreement with the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, ICE, that basically has the Nassau County Police Department working hand in glove with ICE doing immigration raids. So he's governed as a pretty strong law and order conservative and has been pretty close to President Trump through all of it.
Right. And of course, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik has been a Trump loyalist. So is Blakeman's bid surprising here?
You know, it is a little bit surprising. It's probably not what Republicans need or want. Party leaders have said for some time that they wanted to avoid a primary. They wanted to spend all of their time, energy, and resources focusing on the Democrats because, let's face it, this is a blue state, and any Republican candidate already faces an uphill climb. And, you know, as you mentioned, Stefanik tried to preempt this. She rolled out a lot of supporters around the state. She quickly got into the race and declared her candidacy just after Election Day. Some people said that was kind of a move to try and choke out Blakeman and make her candidacy seem inevitable. But it's clear from this that she just doesn't have the same reservoir of backers in New York City on Long Island. And guess what? That's where the people live in this state. So, you know, as I already said, Blakeman and Stefanik are both allies of President Trump, you know, that quasi-New Yorker who is in the White House. He was asked about this, and he didn't pick a side publicly. He just said they were both, quote, great people. So we'll see if over time that changes. We'll see if someone gets a job, they get out of the race. There's still quite a bit to do here.
So what is Blakeman's record?
Well, he can boast about his success about holding local GOP seats in a more purple county. Unlike Stefanik, he's also pro-choice, which puts him in the sweet spot of the last Republican who won statewide office, George Pataki. So that's been a big part of Blakeman's pitch. He can win over moderates. He can win over some disaffected Democrats. And he says that's been a key to his wins in Nassau County, a place where there are about 100,000 more enrolled Democrats than Republicans. Take a listen to how Blakeman framed his candidacy on Good Day New York.
They want safe communities. They want prosperity. They want to be happy again. They want a future for their kids and their grandkids. I've done that in Nassau County, and I can do it in the state. When they find out about that, and they hear about me, and they know about my record, they're going to vote for me.
So we'll have to see, Andrew, if this forces a tactical shift by Stefanik. She's been very focused on the MAGA base. And, you know, she's written a book about anti-Semitism on college campuses. I pledged on these airwaves that I would read it. Still waiting for it to come. Maybe it'll be under the Christmas tree. And she also led a fight in Congress over weaponizing the FBI. So, you know, we'll see whether she changes course.
Got it. Okay, then let's turn quickly to news that a grand jury on Thursday declined for a second time in a week to reindict New York Attorney General Letitia James. Do you think this is finally the end of the Virginia mortgage fraud case against James?
Well, I don't want to say never, because prosecutors work in secret and so do grand juries. It is kind of remarkable. They say you can indict a ham sandwich. And the right. fact that two separate grand juries reported by the Associated Press and other outlets have declined to bring these charges, I think it speaks volumes. And it sort of lends credence to James's rebuttal, which is that all of this was politically motivated. So we'll see what happens in Virginia. Separately, in Albany, we're waiting for a federal judge to rule about two subpoenas that were requested by a Trump-backed prosecutor here in the Capital Region. That's John Sarcone. Mm-hmm. So we'll see whether a ruling comes against Sarcone, against his actions, as we've seen other federal judges rule against Trump-picked and Trump-backed prosecutors in places like Virginia. Listeners might recall that it was a ruling that Lindsay Halligan, who was a White House lawyer before Trump installed her as the top federal prosecutor in Eastern Virginia, that led to these charges against James being thrown out.
Okay, and then finally, you reported a nice piece this week about a new program in the Albany Police Department. What's going on there?
Well, it was a pretty cool one. I had heard about something that Albany is doing called the CART team. And what it essentially does is it means that there are social service caseworkers who are working for the police department, and they get dispatched to calls instead of armed police officers. So I actually talked with Police Chief Brendan Cox about this program at an announcement and said, hey, can I ride along? And he said, yes. So I went to the South Station and met up with two people, Diana Macy and Brooke Letarte. Then I watched along as they went to a few calls. We visited a group home where a man was making a disturbance, and the caseworkers, nobody got arrested, but they were able to just find him a different place to stay for the night, let everybody cool off. It was the kind of thing where if you're an officer and all you have is a pair of handcuffs, it might be harder to come up with a solution like that. So that's exactly the idea behind this program. It's to have people who can do things other than make arrests. And at a time where police are being called to respond to a panoply of situations, including many instances where people are in some kind of mental health crisis, this is Albany's solution. I think it was cool to watch because other cities around the state and around the country, including New York City,
right,
under Mayor Alexis Ram Mamdani, are trying to set up things that are similar.
And that was Andrew White and Jimmy Vielkind of the New York Public News Network, the wrap-up of the political news in New York last week. We'll take a break, and when we come back, a wrap-up of what's going on in the economy. Local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Jason Dole letting you know how you can help nourish our neighbors. More families are struggling to put food on the table. Local food pantries are stepping up, but they need help. You can donate non-perishable food, personal care items, or baby supplies, or volunteer to assist with distribution. It can make a real difference. Learn more at WJFFradio.org to help make sure everyone in our community has enough to eat. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
I'm Laura Flanders. Join me Monday evenings at 7 on Radio Catskill for Laura Flanders and Friends. It's the show where the people who say it can't be done take a backseat to the people who are doing it. Then stay with us for three more Powerhouse Talk programs back to back. Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk at 7:30, The Janice Adams Show at 8, and La Voz en Breve with Mariel Fiore at 9. Monday evenings, starting at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill on a Monday. Working 9 to 5. That means we get to check in with James B. Huntington, local author and economist, for some local economic perspective. James B., good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, let's talk about something that's going on. The interest rates last week, how did those change? What happened with those again this time? What is this, the third cut?
Yes, the Federal Reserve went for another quarter point cut. That is the third straight, exactly. It's now 3.5 to 3.75% is the target rate. It's described as a contentious decision where a couple of people thought they shouldn't lower the rates at all, and the rest decided to go through with it, where some people are disagreeing. It's the problem they have here is that they didn't have complete data. They didn't have decently recent jobs data, and so they don't know. They're flying half blind. They go through. There are also distractions coming from the White House, which not all of them ignore. And we're now looking for possibly no rate decrease, rather, next time, the next meeting. But there, we don't know, though. I mean, my reaction to that is always that they need to look at the data how it is then. We have a jobs report coming out tomorrow, and we don't know what's in it, and other things. So some of the articles here talking about whether they're going to cut rates next time or not ignore the real main source of information, the sources of information they have about whether to cut rates. They don't have the whole thing planned out. It's going to depend on where we are in January or February.
Well, what does the Fed's interest rate cut mean for us, for listeners? Will borrowers see lower rates?
Oh, running down the categories here, auto rates have been pretty much the same, but we have new car prices going up and tariffs are expected to push them up even more. The good news is it was down to 6.6% in November, which was 7% this summer. Used cars are now at 10.6% average, down from 10.8% in October. That's not going to change a lot, and probably everything is going to break even on car loans. Not much change ultimately. If you have an existing one, it may go down a little bit more. Credit cards, if you are unfortunate enough to be carrying credit card balances, which is really a last resort, that interest rate may go down a bit from its 19.83% average. Those things are negotiable with your credit card companies, but they're still, of course, very high, and they've been getting higher over the last decades and such in relation to other interest rates. Mortgages, they don't usually move with the Federal Reserve's decision. They go with the 10-year Treasury bond yield, but it's 6.19% was the average for a 30-year fixed as of December 4th. It's down a little bit from 6.23 and 6.69 a year ago. Savings accounts and CDs, that's going to make it harder to find low interest rates, especially low interest rates, 4% or more. Even at online banks are going to be harder to find, so you're not going to have as many. But as before, shop around if you have one. And student loans, they dropped unusually over the last few months. Now 6.39%, it's down points from 6.53%. Graduate and professional students, though, are higher, just a little under 8% now. So not big changes, but it all adds up, and there may be more.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of shopping, shopping on the weekend, noticing some small businesses, local businesses, just happened to notice that maybe some of the prices looked like they were a little bit higher. Are small businesses in general having to be compelled to raise their prices because of inflation concerns?
Yes. Yes, with higher costs, with inflation, and with tariffs here and there. The share of small businesses raising their selling prices jumped to an all-time high in November. We have 13% more of owners are expecting to raise their prices within the next few months. So they also have problems with labor quality, and a lot of uncertainty out there. Mm-hmm. If people spend less money, that can hurt their prices also. If they need to cover what they have and they're not going to get the economies of scale that they would like to have. So generally, yes, they are probably going to go up modest amounts, but very real amounts at small businesses. Mm-hmm.
And also, this looks like, you know, some of these pressures are affecting the housing market as well. Why are more and more houses being taken off the market?
Well, that's certainly happening. It's 6% of listings since June have been removed from the market. We're having about, for every 3 or 4 new listings, there's one being taken off. It's consistently, the reason for that is that people aren't getting the price, don't think they can get the price they want, and given buyers not only whether they like it, but whether they're actually willing to pay. So their chance of actually selling it depends on someone accepting the price and on someone having the money or having the wherewithal and such to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's the housing market is a little bit slow. It's not as big here. The problem is bigger in the South and the West than it is in our part of the country. Right. But there are a lot of complaints and such about how the housing market is going.
Mm-hmm. And then our part of the country tends to be slower during the winter months anyway. Speaking of winter months, what are the worst American airports for winter and snow delays? I think I have a feeling I know of two of them nearby.
Yes, and probably the two of them that are nearby are exactly the two that are on this list. They name Newark. Mm-hmm. A problem with 3/7 of holiday delays are tied to weather. Most of their delays year-round in general are tied to weather. It's a lot of East Coast storms and congestions and a problem overall with weather. And the other one is New York City, an average of 7 days of snow every December in New York. It's snowstorms in particular can be bad for the two major airports in New York. So also bad in Boston, Chicago, and New York. Detroit, rather. All three of those are having problems here and there, often have problems with delays. So it's the cold places. But then again, if you have a way of avoiding these airports, if you're near somewhere, say if you're nearer to Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is closer really than a lot of people may think. Mm-hmm. It's less than a 3-hour drive and they don't have quite the problems. It's considerably warmer with less snow in January and February and such. If you have some choices, if you have a close decision here, you may want to avoid this cities I mentioned.
Well, and I just noticed that yesterday when the snow moved through New York City, LaGuardia was under a ground stop for nearly 6 hours Sunday, JFK underground delay Sunday morning and facing delays over 3 hours. And that was just the snow kind of moving through that area yesterday. Have another story for us here about folks. I find this hard to believe, but why are folks making six figures still living paycheck to paycheck?
Well, money is sort of the same thing as eating. It all not only depends on how you're doing with coming in, but it matters how much goes out also. And that's the real problem we have, or a lot of people are having. They name a series of things that people are doing often, even when they have fine incomes. One is no spending plan, just spending. They're not holding off on things enough. It's easy to get an attitude when you have an income of, I've earned this, I deserve this, I can buy what I want. Well, to a point, but as I learned in an 8th grade economics class, even when the likes of Howard Hughes, even people like that have to choose sometime if they don't buy. If they buy a new 700-foot boat that week, that means they can't get a new Boeing 727. And that goes for everybody. No matter how much money they have, the standards get higher, but they're still there. That's number one. Number two, the pay yourself last rule. This is constant advice that comes through, is to pay yourself first, is to just about in put in ink, set in stone that you are going to save a certain percentage of your income before you spend anything. So a lot of people with more money have, again, you have an attitude, oh, I'm always going to make this kind of money, so I don't need to save anything. Well, you still do, and it adds up to more if you're saving more. So they often, as they say here, six-figure earners often pre-spend their bonuses before they arrive. They should be living off base pay and treating bonuses as forced savings. That could be a fine way if you're at a workplace where you're getting a 13th month or you're getting a performance bonus that's usually a good chunk of cash. If you can stand doing that, that would really help your financial situation. Social media shame, another one. It's the keep up with the Joneses. It's seeing what other people have and trying to match it. I mean, big people should know that there are some things they want more than others and some things they want less than others. So don't feel obliged to spend. And the last one here is poor decisions on the big three: home, car, and school. Too much house or even multiple houses to be your personal money pit. Too expensive of a vehicle, leased or financed or both. If you have that kind of income, you really should be looking into the possibility of just writing a check for a new car. It's awfully nice not to have to have car payments. If you can hack it, if you can find a way of getting around it, it's a real peace of mind thing as well as something that's good for your money. And then they mentioned private school tuition that doesn't fit the long-term plan. Make sure it's worth it, because it's a lot of bucks that go into that. And they say the planning gap is real. The people who have a written financial plan are likely to do much better. That's obvious, but you might do that if you're finding out that more money's going out than going in, or all the money's going out when you think you have plenty enough to live on. Think about writing something out. That would allow you to hold your own feet to the fire a lot better.
All right, let's talk about the numbers, how they changed from early this morning and from over the week.
Yes, over the past week, as of early this morning, gold $43.42 an ounce. That's up $134 after last weekend's do nothing slight loss thing. It's going back to setting new records. And silver, even more so, $63.62, up $5.28 over the past week. It's spectacular. The ratio between silver and gold is 68-1. We've had almost 110-1 earlier this year, but not looking that now. And silver is at an all-time high and may well go higher, probably will go higher the way it's going. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 48,458 plus 503, not far from an all-time high there. These last weeks, it looks overall robust, really, the Dow has been doing. Not so good for NASDAQ, 23,195, down 383. It lives and dies on what people are saying and thinking and talking about AI. Is it a bubble? Is it not going to make it? Do we have structural problems? That seems to affect the price of the NASDAQ, a solid rumor, something that spreads around, or just an opinion that spreads around somehow brings it down more than anything. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $57.49 the barrel. That's down $2.05. Great news. I'm seeing gas in the listening area and at the fringes. I go down into New Jersey a lot these days, and it's been as low. I paid $2.69 a gallon there. Even in New York State, it's still below $3. And Pennsylvania may be a bit higher, but it's still finally really going lower. now that it's the price is low and dropping a bit. Bitcoin, 89,880, down 2,125, finding a new range, although it's going to be a wide range for Bitcoin. Doesn't seem to go back to its over 100,000 it was. British pound, 1.3382, up 64 hundredths of a cent. It's the euro, 1.1741, up 88 hundredths of a cent. Both of those are now looking good. It looks like they have reasons. There is quite a bit of trading and speculation and efforts to take profits or bring the prices up and a lot of things that vary. But believe it or not, the Japanese 100 yen coin is 65 cents, up a penny. It went somewhere. Investment prosperity is what we have now, with high prices on everything getting higher. It looks like that's going to be what 2025 is going to end up looking like.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on the end of the year, and then we'll look forward to next year with James B. Huntington keeping an eye on all of it for us local economist and author. James B., thanks.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners. Use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you
crazy if you let it. 9 to 5 for service. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, a local bakery serving up classic Hanukkah pastries. That's coming up next on Radio Chatskill.
OpenAI's Sora 2 lets anyone with a smartphone make and share AI-generated deep fake videos, from phony footage of a corgi rock climbing to fake videos of kids carrying guns in school. What could go wrong?
We're actually now in a world where, I hate to say it, but we cannot believe our eyes.
How to hold on to reality in a world of AI-generated lies. That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, why does one piece of music from nearly 300 years ago lend such comfort to our turbulent times?
Handel thought that even in the middle of war and disease and death, it was worth making a piece of art.
We set out for Dublin to tell the story of George Frideric Handel's Messiah. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's the second day of Hanukkah, a celebratory 8 nights for Jewish communities around the world. Part of the festivities is the food. Rugelach, challah, and sufganiyot. I hope I did that right. All tasty pastries you may see on the table during Hanukkah. On Farm and Country, host Kimberly Izar and producer Ronald Kelson headed to Rugelach Haimisha, a popular Jewish bakery in Monticello, to learn more about how they're preparing for the holidays. Here's what they saw, smelled, and tasted from Aga, the head baker.
That's the sound of the bakery mixer, spinning the carefully measured dough for sufganiyot, a traditional Jewish donut shaped, fried, and often filled with jelly or custards to perfection. Aga, the head baker at Rugelach Haimisha, a Jewish bakery in Monticello, says that getting the right size and temperature to fry a batch is an art.
Yeah, so the temperature has to be like somewhere between 320 to 350. If it's less, it takes longer and too much oil soaks into the donut. And if it's too much, then it burns the top, but it doesn't cook the inside.
After sufganiyot have been fried and cooled, some are even dipped in other delicious flavors that Aga says folks from all over the East Coast come for.
So we have like chocolate covered, we have like white chocolate covered, rainbow sprinkle, chocolate sprinkle, and chocolate covered with like white chocolate with black lines, black chocolate with like white lines. So like we try to make like as much variety as we could.
Is the custard dairy or parv?
So we use parv because, yes, we keep dairy completely separate, yes. For dairy, we do have, like, variety of selection. We have the cannoli. That's, like, is very, very popular and very tasty. And a lot of people, actually, we have people come from, like, out of state. Like, yeah, people from Florida, PA, they come by and, like, yo, we were here. And on our way back, we're going to, like, take as much as we can. Yeah, we had, I think Sunday, we had some people from Florida. They were, like, heading back. They're like, oh, we had to. This is, like, every time we come around, this is a key spot to stop. Yes.
At Regala Khemsha, the sweet, sugary smell of the pastries hit you the moment you walk in. Here's Aga, the head baker, giving our producer, Ronald Kelson, and I a tour.
My name is Aga. I've been baking, I would say, since 2012. So I started, like, right off high school. I graduated from SUNY Cortland with a bachelor in physics.
And when did you start this
bakery? So bakery, I started when I was in high school. So I was like, yeah, I was working as like a summer job, but then I liked the baking. So I started like doing it every time, like I would come home for the summertime. So I'll do it and then I'll go away and then I would come during like Hanukkah season to help with the donuts and everything. So yeah, 13, 14 years of baking, yes. Yep.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about some of the pastries that we have here.
These platters, we don't usually make it in the wintertime. This is, we only make it for like Hanukkah or like big kind of celebration.
What's in it?
So this is a like sponge cake. This is a flaky dough, rogala. This is a three color, people also call it like rainbow cake because like it's like multicolor. This is a brownie and this is a heavy marble cake. So it depends. So this tray, it's not all the platters in the same category. So we make it like, we also make like custom. Like yesterday we had a like order of 42 of these platters for a bank. They were giving out to their customers. So we have two kinds of ragala. One is flaky, one is softer. So the flaky dough is more like a crunchy, crispy, with sugar inside and powdered sugar on top. So like you bite into it and like you feel the crisp. And then we have another very popular, that's like the softer kind of rogala. That's like the most people usually buy. That's like softer dough, sweet dough. So we have three different flavors, vanilla, cinnamon, and chocolate. So it's like more like a chewy texture.
Which one's your favorite?
I like the crispy. I like the crisp, yeah.
What else do we have here?
So basically, we try to keep as much variety as we can. We have like custard cannoli. We have Kendall. If you look here, it's like we have all kind of like danishes. This is apple, cherry, cinnamon. So basically, the base for all three is the same. It's just different topping on it. So we have custard cannoli and we have eclair. So we try to keep the cookies like loose and in container for like the kid comes in, they want a cookie. So this is like an option for them to like pick a cookie. We also have a variety of cakes. Right now it's like middle of the week, so we don't have much. So usually we aim for Friday because since it's like Shabbos, so most of our customers is like Friday and Sunday. So we try to aim it everything fresh at the end. So I don't know if you saw, like he was cutting up other things too, like babka's cockroach cake is like one of our like main mover. Because that's like more like a Haimish thing. So this is the babka, this is kokosh cake. So this we have like heavier people that likes chocolate a lot. We have a heavy babka, people that likes very light. We have option for them too. We try to keep everything like a variety. We also have like gluten-free stuff. So this is peanut gluten-free. We also have like almond gluten-free. We have mandel bread. So this is also another like people favorite mover. We have rumble, okay, no rum, just the flavor, because we have a lot of kids coming in, so we have brownie bites for the kids, so we try to keep variety for everybody, so if you come in, a lot of people, like, tries to rush out of here, they're like, the more we spend time here, the more we end up buying, because, like, it's so much, so good stuff,
yeah.
Basically.
Here.
So this is like basically like daily baked goods like bagels, baguette, rolls, and sweet rolls. This is for like sandwiches. We also have salad bar. So if you like say, this is mostly throughout the day, people hungry, they come in. So it's not just pastry. They could also get their like lunch from us or breakfast. We have scrambled egg for breakfast. So these are the regulars that I was telling you about. This is cinnamon. Yeah, this is cinnamon. This is chocolate vanilla. So this is basically a similar type of dough. It's just a different filling. So this is a sweet dough. We use sweet dough for it. Most of these things are made from the similar kind of dough. It's just the fillings are different. We have another thing, people that loves onion. We have onion pocket, onion board, and this is like, it's like egg cracker, like with onions on top. This is very good. Yes.
Well, I'm just curious, leading up to Hanukkah, I know that you guys have the donuts. Yeah. How else are you preparing?
So basically, Hanukkah is like more of like the celebration of like oil. So it's like more oily stuff. So we'll have like latkes. It's like a potato pancake. Yes. So we don't make it like in the beginning because it's a lot of people didn't come yet. So throughout the next week, we'll hope to have everything. Yes. So as you see in platters. So mainly thing is the donut. So this people go crazy about donut, and we fill it up. Like most people come and they're like, oh, I got it from such and such places. There's barely any fillings. I'm like, we want to give you your money worth. We don't want to rob you, basically. Yes.
And before we sign up, do you want to just tell people where they can find you?
Okay. So this is the address is 4437 Route 42. This is right across from Home Depot or like ShopRite in Monticello, right next to the Taco Bell. So if you like passing by, you'll see our sign or like blinking light. So please come on, say hi. We don't bite. So please come by.
And thanks to Farm and Country's Kimberly Izar and Ronald Kelson for that report. We'll take a break, and when we come back, how do you protect your pets from icy sidewalks, road salt, and freezing temperatures? Milford Animal Hospital will give us some winter safety tips for your furry companions after this. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
Psychiatrist Anna Lemke treats people with various kinds of addictions.
I deal with a lot of families where the kids are, addicted to video games or social media. And the parents like, I don't know why he just won't stop. Meanwhile, they've got a screen in every room and everybody's got 12 devices.
How modern life makes us all vulnerable to addiction. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Winter weather isn't just tough on people, it can be dangerous for pets too. Cold temperatures, road salt, and antifreeze all pose risks, especially for puppies, senior pets, and short-haired breeds. Joining us live this morning is Alexandra Ascion from Milford Animal Hospital, an AAHA-accredited veterinary practice serving the Northern Poconos. Alexandra, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We were just talking about the weather as you traveled over from Milford and the roads, and we were complaining about it. I can only imagine about how our pets might want to complain, but we'll get to that in just a second. But let's remind folks about Milford Animal Hospital and the services you provide there.
Milford Animal Hospital is a clinic that has been around for quite a long time, but under the current ownership, it has been established for the past 5 years, actually marking it now in December. We do provide a very wide range of services, starting with your everyday things, including wellness exams, vaccines, things like that, all the way to emergency surgeries. So we do try to provide every single type of care that your pet might need at any stage of their life.
And, as winter is setting in, and boy, is it setting in, what are some of the biggest risks you see for pets in these cold and snowy conditions?
Right. So when it comes to snow and the things that you might encounter condition-wise outdoors, those things obviously include the snow, ice, salt that we use all the time. So their paws are constantly at risk for injuries, and just from being exposed to all those things, they can crack and cause issues from that standpoint. So when it comes to those things, there are very simple things that you can try doing, like putting booties on your dog's paws. They might hate it, but it will keep them protected. And also using balms and creams on their paw pads just to keep them moisturized so they don't really crack that easily.
And would you recommend even just wiping down their paws if they come out in from the snow?
Absolutely, yes. Sometimes also those smaller dogs, their bellies are also exposed to all those things that we might encounter outside.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those smaller dogs and some of the other at-risks, pets like puppies, senior dogs, short-haired dogs. A lot of people assume fur is enough, but with some of these types of pets and animals, not so much.
Not necessarily, because also when it comes to the tiny little ones, the young ones, and the older ones, the way that they regulate their body temperatures might not be as efficient. So first of all, we don't want to overexpose them to the low temperatures, but also making sure that they have that little coat or a cute jacket might be very beneficial to them. But then also just proceed with caution, try not to overdo it with them. A little bit of playtime in the snow is absolutely lovely, but we want to make sure that they are not actually shaking from how cold it is outside.
How long is too long for exposure out there or a walk in like really freezing temperatures? I mean, does that change based on their age or their breed?
Absolutely. And also every pet is different. You know, personally, my own dog will get the zoomies for about 5 minutes and then she starts to shake. So the moment that I see that we're starting to get cold, we go back inside immediately.
My dog does the same. She wants to go and play with the ball all the way out in the yard with the ball thrower. Yet when she has to do her business, she stays very close to the house, which is an interesting scene. Anyway, road salt, ice melt, common this time of year. How do those chemicals that you mentioned affect their paws? And are there other things that folks should look out for, like, I guess, antifreeze in certain areas?
Antifreeze is a big one. Mm-hmm. That is something that is very dangerous to pets. Antifreeze has a sweet taste to it, so it can make it that much more attractive to pets. They don't know better. If you have a spill anywhere and they lick it up, then it becomes an emergency very quickly. So in case your pet ever is exposed to antifreeze, I want to say don't wait. Just make sure that you get your pet to an emergency place ASAP.
Wow. I didn't think about that, but also didn't really think about this as well with cats. Sometimes cats will seek warmth under like a hood of a vehicle. So it's important to check before you start your car.
Yes.
And also, when do you think that a person should seek care from a vet like Milford Animal Hospital when it comes to cold exposure or signs of cold exposure or hypothermia?
So you know your pet the best. In case that you start picking up on anything that is just not quite right about them, it's better to be safe than sorry, in my opinion. But also having that rationale in the back of your head that, hey, you know, we have been outside for a little bit long. I might want to be looking out for any signs of my pet not doing so well. So in case that there is anything that worries you, I want to say just reach out to us, give us a phone call, and then maybe we can give you some tips.
What about folks who have indoor pets? Are any changes they should make or look out for if they're just all inside?
So when it comes to indoor pets, I want to say that diet can be a big thing, especially if they don't really go outside as much as they would in the warm season. Then we might want to make sure that they are not gaining weight too much. Right. We might want to cut down a little bit on the amount of snacks and treats that we give them.
It's a good tip for the owners as well during the holiday season.
I should take my own advice.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about some of the services you provide at Milford Animal Hospital. There's some new stuff coming up. You've got a new CT scan.
Yes, we are getting a CT machine. So we are becoming a full-fledged emergency place gradually. Currently, we are open 6 days a week, and we will provide services anytime that we are able to. Ideally, we want to expand our hours and also the scope of practice. As of right now, we are waiting for the CT machine to arrive. We will be one of the handful of clinics in PA that will even offer that service. So we are very excited about it.
Wow, that's it's amazing to know that like there aren't that many actually in the area that have those types of services. So the fact that you're getting that will be a big plus for folks and the comfort and care of their pets.
Yes, it's huge. We want to make sure that we are able to provide best care possible to everyone.
I noticed that you guys also do a lot in the community, a lot of events that you guys sponsor, and you're out there in the community. How does supporting some of these local organizations and events connect with the veterinary practice, and what makes it special for you guys?
So we want to keep the hometown feel of things. This clinic started out as a small town clinic, and the connection between the community and the clinic is very important to us. So we want to cultivate that by being present at all those community events. So even though that we do have big plans and we want to keep getting better and bigger and all of that, we still want to keep in touch with the community.
And before we go, what's the one winter safety tip you wish every pet owner would remember? Or just overall tip, if it doesn't have to be applied to winter.
To winter. I want to say that also Christmas is a big thing here.
Yeah, tell me why.
Things that, you know, we don't really see as a threat during Christmas time, but things that can actually become a threat to the pets. Things like ornaments or sweets, tinsel, ribbons, all those things that we surround ourselves with during December and, you know, the holiday season. If your pet is curious enough, they can turn anything into a potential threat.
Exactly. Well, that because like a ribbon or something, they could chew, it could get caught, yeah. Ornaments that they could break, or other things that could happen there.
Yes, Christmas lights, sweets.
Oh, gosh.
The list goes on and on.
I'm going to rethink putting up that tree. That's Alexandra Ascione from Milford Animal Hospital with some tips to keep our pets safe and comfortable this winter. More information about Milford Animal Hospital Services at milfordanimalvet.com. And our conversation is part of our Chamber Chats series with the Chamber of the Northern Poconos, and we thank them for that. And we thank you, Alexandra, for being here.
Thank you very much.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening, and keep your animals safe.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, letting you know that this month on Radio Catskill, we'll be taking a look back at the biggest local news stories of the year and showcasing the work of our amazing news team. Look, I've been here for decades, and I've never seen anything like 2025. We had more reporters making more quality news than ever before, and none of that would have been possible without you. Another thing that I never saw before this year? 24% of our budget disappearing overnight. You know, the defunding of public media was a shock. It continues to threaten the good work that we do, but it has not stopped that work. And again, that's thanks to listeners like you who stood with us. I thank you so much for that. And I ask that you stand with us again. We're trying to make our year-end goal, and right now, your donation will have triple the impact. From now until December 31st, gifts of $1,000 or less will be matched one-to-one by Newsmatch and by an anonymous longtime Radio Catskill supporter. You make a one-time donation before the end of the year, it will be tripled. Become a sound supporter, all 12 of your monthly donations will be tripled. Plus, gifts of $100 and more will also be entered for a chance to win a two-night stay at the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast. A renovated farmhouse sleeps four, located near the top of Hoke Mountain Road in the town of Walton. Go to WJFFradio.org, WJFFradio.org to give today. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Supported by listeners like you. Thank you so much.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year. NACL.org, and from listeners like you.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Breezy and cold today, a couple of flurries followed by a bit of snow this afternoon, but little or no accumulation. So watch for some slippery spots on the roads. A high of 22. Tonight's cold, temperature low 9, but we'll get a break from cold weather later this week. Tomorrow, 27. Wednesday, 40. Looks like 40 and up to 50 by Friday with a little rain. On Point is coming up next.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we've got the exotic sounds of the Waitiki 7 and the new Les Baxter Orchestra. Plus, the Brass Impact Orchestra will take you to the very threshold of pain. Ah. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour.
Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. Streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.